so we know who got the looks and the brains in that family. And the talent. He didn't even hear it. I wasted it. Open your Bible this morning, the book of Matthew. Matthew chapter 28. Funny thing is, Travis said he got his looks and talent from him. I'm not sure if that's right or not. Matthew chapter 28. You know the passage. We have labeled it over the years. It has become known as the Great Commission. It's, again, something that most of us know, at least part of it. But I think one of the things we miss... unfortunately, is the setting that leads up to Christ telling his disciples to go into all the world. We unfortunately, as we're going to talk about in just a moment, we don't see some of the nuances of the language, of the words that Jesus chose to use here. Honestly, we could probably... I couldn't because I'm not smart enough, but I'm sure if you brought the right person to stand here today that literally you could teach all day on this passage, on the beauty of the Great Commission and what is said there, how it's said, again, the setting around what is said. It is a marvelous statement that Christ makes. And understand it, I think, completely. Again, we've got to back up. If you think about it, you've noticed that we're in the 28th chapter of Matthew. So you know we're over near the end of it. And so this particular story happens near the end of Christ's earthly ministry. In fact, it's after the resurrection. And so Christ is standing in front of his disciples after the resurrection, and he is addressing them and talking to them about this and giving them the Great Commission. And so it's in that backdrop that when Christ is speaking here, he is speaking with much more even authority than he had just a few days ago. The disciples certainly have followed Christ for 3 years and have listened to his teachings. We have seen Christ take the disciples off alone and teach them. But now they have seen the events of the arrest and the trial and the crucifixion. They have seen the empty tomb. And now he speaks to them with a different measure of authority. Just like when we read the Scripture today, when we think about the things of God, we think of them in that way. We think of the fact that we are listening, we are following one who has overcome death, hell, and the grave. And so that gives it much more authority to us than it would otherwise. And so when the disciples are listening to Jesus in those 40 days following his resurrection, they're listening. I think we would agree that no doubt they're listening with a little more attention. They are paying they're giving his words a little bit more weight now as he speaks from that vantage point. And as he speaks to them, then he delivers to them this great commission of going into the world and making disciples. Unfortunately, I think many times when we read the Great Commission, we quote the Great Commission, when we preach on the Great Commission, we overlook something that is extremely important, and that is the verse leading up to what we actually label as the Great Commission. We overlook that statement. It's a curious passage, and again, I don't have the ability or the time today, honestly. Well, I've got time if you'll stay with me, but to really dig into it, because honestly, there's a couple of things. That verse that leads up to it, and then there's really five words in the Great Commission that the whole thing revolves around. And it's important for us to see, not that any of the words are not important, but five of the words completely, I think, change everything about our understanding and our carrying out the Great Commission. And when we look at this, I think, unfortunately, when we call it the Great Commission, we miss the fact that it's not just a commission, it's not a suggestion, it's not a recommendation, it is a commandment. We are familiar with the Ten Commandments, but those are not the only Ten Commandments in the Bible. Pray without ceasing is a commandment. Love your neighbor is a commandment. In all things give thanks is a commandment. And the Great Commission, while it is a commission, is a commandment. There is no retirement program. There is no day off. There is no escape clause to the Great Commission. It is present as long as we are alive. And part of it is because of what Christ is saying in this opening verse when he tells us about the power that he is delegating. Again, he is coming to the disciples right after the resurrection. And he comes to them and he says, all power has been given to me in heaven and in earth. And so he sets the stage there. He's reminding them again of where he's been, that reminding them of what they have witnessed in the last few days, that they have witnessed his crucifixion, that they have witnessed his death, they have witnessed his burial, that they are now part of and witnessing his resurrection and the empty tomb. And he basically is coming to them and saying, I won. I'm in charge. That because of the events that have taken place in the last few days, no questions. End of discussion. I am the undisputed king. That because I have defeated death, hell, and the grave, the Bible says, O death, where is thy sting? The Bible says that God gave him the keys of death and hell. The keys represent ownership or victorious nature over. And because of that, he comes to him and he is simply explaining the significance of the resurrection. He is again saying to them that I am now in authority. That word there, when it says that all power is given to me in heaven and in earth, really, the way you and I would probably say it today is not power, but authority. He's saying, I have authority over. I am in charge of. I am staking my claim, he says, as he addresses them. In the simplest terms, Christ simply says to the disciples, I'm in charge now. I have all authority over everything in heaven and in earth. There's nothing anywhere that I don't have authority over, that I don't have power over. And again, it's much like a conquering warrior, a king after a battle would ride in and claim his victory, claim his territory that he has won. And Christ is doing that as he stands here. He says, I am laying claim to my position of King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and I am establishing, I am stating my authority. And this is, again, critical, I think, for us to understand and completely implement what he is about to say as he lays out the case here and says, I am in charge. But here's where it really comes into play for you and I. Notice the first word of the next verse. The first word of the next verse says, therefore. Now, if you haven't learned anything in my almost 22 years, I hope you've learned this, that when you read the word therefore in the Bible, find out what it's there for. It's always there for a reason. It's connecting it to something. It's relating it to something. And so Christ has just established that I am the King of Kings, Lord of Lords. I have all authority over everything. Therefore, because of that, since I have that authority, then this is what I want you to do. I'm sending you out in my power. I'm sending you out in with my authority. You are my representative. Therefore, because I have all power over heaven and earth, you are my ambassador. You have the authority to say, get behind me, Satan. This is because of my authority. Some of you remember the old Andy Griffith show. You remember when the guy set up the produce truck outside of town and they were selling produce out by the road and Barney was trying to get them to leave and they scared Barney and Barney ran back and ran back home and wouldn't say anything. And finally Andy figured out what was going on and you remember what he told him? He said, Barney, it's not about you. It's about the bag. It's about the people you represent. It's about the authority you represent. And sent Barney back out to get the produce sellers off the side of the road. And he went back out, with that understanding. I'm here under a different authority. Listen, what Christ is saying in this passage is He is saying to you and I have put the badge on you. I have authorized you. You are going out in my authority. We're not to go out and try to teach the world. We're not to go out and try to evangelize the world, disciple the world in our ability, our authority, our power. He says, I have all power. I have all power over heaven and earth. Therefore, you go do this. You go do this. Kind of like Moses standing there at the burning bush when Moses said to God, he said, when I go back to Egypt, who do I tell them sent me? He says, you tell them the I Am sent you. You tell them the great I Am sent you. They'll pay attention. That's all they need to know. What Christ is saying leading into the Great Commission is you tell them the great I Am sent you. You tell them that Jesus Christ, who has power over all heaven and all of earth, He sent you to carry this out. When you go out to teach, to disciple, to baptize, you're not going out on your whim. You're not going out on your fancy. You're not going out on your desire. You're going out with my express permission. You're going out as my ambassador and my representative. Therefore, go into all the nations. Go and teach all nations. Disciple all nations, baptizing them, teaching them to observe my commandments. He says, you're doing that in my authority, that we are here. Our mission is to announce the reign of our King. And so I want you to understand, leading in to the Great Commission, how you're doing it, how you're going, what authority you're operating on. And then as we actually dig into the Great Commission, now that we understand the power that is there, we're going to dig in a little bit, and we're going to do something that let me just go ahead and apologize right up front. Now, there are a few of you who may like where we're headed, but I'm going to have to take you to English class. Now, I know some of you thought I'm long since done with English. Some of you who have heard me butcher the English language think, he's taking us to English class? Well, I am. I is. How's that? You know. Hang on. I want you to understand there are four critical words in the Great Commission. Now, part of the problem with our understanding of this is several things. Part of it is we don't speak Greek. Second part of it is there's not a soul in here who remembers Norma May. Because she's been a teacher. Travis, Norman Travis might remember. Might remember. Can you tell us what a participle is? You taught elementary school. You off the hook. They didn't teach him participles in elementary school. Michael, you still in high school. You remember what a participle is? Ain't got a clue. Huh? Let's see. Let me look around. Ryan, you've been to school to learn how to work on computers. You know what a participle is? Not a clue. Just say it. I got to be honest with you. I didn't either. I had to go look it up. I couldn't quite remember what one was. I don't know participles from pepperoni. I had to go look it up too. I want you to understand something. There's something very important here. If nothing else, I want you to see, if you don't get, is how beautifully Jesus uses language to convey His point. In this passage, there are three participles and one verb. Now, y'all remember what a verb is, right? I tell you how I remember what a verb is. I don't remember which teacher. I don't remember much from school, but I remember this. I remember that they taught us that if you can stand up and do it, it's a verb. I remember a verb. Nouns are person, place, or thing. Adverbs describe a verb and usually end in L-Y. And adjectives, everything left. How's that? That's my English. But I had to go study on participles a little bit. They've always been. They were there in the Greek. We've got them in English. A participle, you know what a verb is? A verb is an action word. Now, when you and I, we look at this verse, we actually see several action words. For example, I have heard, and you have no doubt heard, many sermons that emphasize the word go. Many times, this passage will be used in a missionary commissioning service or in a drive to find missionaries. We are commanded to go. Well, when we read it in the English, it does look like an action word. Teach, baptize. Those words all look like action words. Unfortunately, only one of them is actually, not unfortunately, I guess, but unfortunately for our understanding of English, there's only one of them that is actually a verb. You might know which one it is? We'll take a stab at it. Which one is actually the action word in that?
Teach, commanded.
Go. Huh? Make. I'm kind of not intentionally misleading. The Greek word was one word. The actual action word, the verb in this sentence, is teach all nations. That's the action. In fact, if you use a modern translation, it actually says make disciples. That is the action word. The participles are the words that describe the verb, tell you how to do the verb. Let me give you an example. In English, generally, the participles end in ing. For example, if Debbie tells Dale, clean the kitchen. Well, let's say you did. Can it just be my illustration? If Debbie says, clean the kitchen, what's the verb? And I'm doing this for a reason. It'll make, Archie's heard me preach this. So it makes sense, doesn't it? It takes me a minute to get there, but it'll make sense. I got to go here to get to the point. Clean the kitchen. What's the verb? Okay. Now, if Debbie says, clean the kitchen by mopping the floor, carrying out the garbage, and washing the dishes, what is the verb? It's still clean. The participles are the words that describe how you do the verb. You with me? Clean the kitchen by mopping. I told you they ended in ing, the floor. Mopping is the participle. It tells Dale how to clean. By washing the dishes, how to clean. What was the other one? Carrying out the trash. Anything else you want me to tell him? Yeah. So the three participles in that statement are mopping, carrying, and washing. They describe how to clean the kitchen. Now, why am I again, it's real, because understand this. The action word in this verse is make disciples. The participles tell us how to make those disciples. So we need to know what the participles are. The participles are go. The participle is teaching them to observe. The participle is go, baptizing, and teaching. Those are the three participles. They tell us how to make disciples. How to make followers, devoted, committed followers of Christ by going, baptizing, and teaching. So how do we make disciples? First of all, by going. Now, what exactly does that mean? Again, when we see it here and it says, go! You know, that looks like G-O with an exclamation point beside it. And you hear that, oh, we got to go on a mission trip. We got to go knock on doors. We've got to go and feed the hungry. Now, that's not what the verse is saying at all. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, and certainly it includes that. But the word is going. And an even clearer way for you and I to understand it is this statement. As you go, make disciples. As you're going along, as you're going where? Everywhere. As you're doing what? Everything. When? All the time. As you go, make disciples. He is telling us that our task, our duty, our role, our responsibility is wherever we go, whenever we're there, whatever we're doing, whoever we're with, we are to be making disciples. Our object, the reason that you are here as a believer, the reason that when you accepted Christ, when you got saved, He didn't just immediately beam you up like Captain Kirk, is because He left you here so that while you are going, you can be making disciples. You can be making other people. You can be helping. And that word making disciple, obviously by the fact that it includes baptizing, is talking about that as we go, we are to be bringing people to Christ, and then we are to be teaching them to observe His commandments. We are, as we go along, wherever we go, and every one of you, I'll guarantee you may not realize it, but every one of us has a fairly normal routine. You get up at roughly the same time, you go through. As you go about your routine, who are you discipling? Who is being brought closer to Christ because of your life, because of your actions? Make disciples. Make disciples, he says. It's not talking about accidentally. We're not talking about, well, I try to live a good life in front of my children. No, that's not what he's talking about. What he's talking about is an intentional decision. Intentionally deciding with your children, with your grandchildren, with friends, with family, that I am going to make an intentional effort to help them on their journey. I'm going to make an intentional effort to teach them to obey the commands. I am going to make a choice. Listen, I want to tell you something. I believe this with all my heart. I believe that every person who is a child of God, I don't care if you just got saved last week or if you've been saved 50 years, that every child of God should have at least one person who they are intentionally discipling. Who they have decided, who God has laid on their heart, and they are intentionally trying to help them in their faith. I was talking to a pastor this week, and I've thought about this. Me and some other preachers have laughed about it since then. It's really not funny. But he said he actually used to pastor in Toronto. And he said that while he was in Toronto and pastoring, they had a rule that if you were not a discipleship grandparent, you could not have a leadership role in their church. And by that he meant if you had not led someone to Christ and then discipled that person to the point where they had led someone to Christ and discipled that person, then you could not be in leadership in that church. Do you know what that would do to the nominating committee report in most Baptist churches? You could put it on a post-it note, along with some notes from the sermon and a few other things. It would devastate us if we implemented that rule. Let me tell you something else. Not only do I believe you should have someone who, as you're going, that you're discipling, but just real quick, does anybody here know everything Jesus taught? Do you understand it all? Are you perfect yet? I'm a little leery asking that question. I'm afraid a few of you will jump up and say, yeah. If you're not, then shouldn't you have somebody who's also along the way helping you to grow closer? We should both be discipling and being discipled. Because he doesn't say, notice that, not go for a while, as you go. Now, I want everybody in here to do this right here. Do you feel something going to thump to thump? If you don't, we got a different problem altogether. See Debbie. See Ann. You know. See my wife. She thinks she's a doctor. Yeah. But, you know, but if you feel something thumping right there, you're still going. And if you're still going, you should be making disciples. If you're a child of God yourself and you're going, you should be making disciples. How do we make disciples? As we go. Everywhere we go, all the time we go, when we go, where we go, we should be making disciples. As long as there's a thump right there, we should be making disciples. Going. Second participle that tells us how we make disciples is not only the word going, but then the second one is baptizing. Now, I realize some of you are going to look at that and go, oh, that's your job. You know, that's what you do. You know, I want to remind you that what baptism represents. I think we need to understand clearly that I believe it's more in this statement than just immersion. What do we call baptism? We call baptism following Christ publicly, right? We talk about it as making our commitment public. I believe what Christ is telling us as part of the Great Commission is that as we go, we should be making disciples by teaching them and helping them to learn to commit themselves to Christ. Isn't that part of what becoming a disciple means? Is that we commit ourselves to Christ. Now, here's the challenge. I don't think we're going to be very good at teaching someone and helping someone to commit to Christ any more than we are committed ourselves. Could that be the reason we don't have a whole lot of people being committed to Christ? Is because those who are supposed to be teaching them to be committed are not committed themselves. I know I just went from preaching to meddling. I understand. Yeah. We are, as we go, we are to make disciples by emphasizing that they should be committed to following Christ. I got a friend in the Hispanic church that I don't know that he does it every Sunday, but I tell you what his fairly normal routine is. He'll stand up on Sunday morning, he'll look around and say, you know, he'll look and say, all right, George ain't here today. Tom, you need to find out where George is this week. Susie's not here today. Pansy, find out where Susie is this week. He'll call them out, you know. Find out where they are. Tell them they need to be in church next week. Call them out. He'll go around the room. Call them out. Assign them to somebody. Some of you say, oh, that's awful bold, awful brash. Listen, aren't we all members of this church? Aren't we all part of the family of God? And if shouldn't we be responsible to each other, for each other? But the Great Commission tells us we are to teach others to commit to Christ. I believe I could hear a pin hit the carpet in here. It's what it says. I'm not making this stuff up. Open your Bible. Don't believe it? Go study it. I'm not even making up what it means. I know it sounds better to say baptizing means immersion, and that's part of it. But part of the immersion means you're doing what? That you're following like Christ. Wasn't Christ baptized? Didn't he go and he was baptized? And so we're being baptized like Christ. That baptizing means we're being like Christ. Part of our job is to teach people what it means to live like Christ. That's how you make a disciple. As you go, live like Christ so others know what it means to be committed to Christ. That's how you make disciples. You don't make disciples by sending them to Sunday school. You don't make disciples by having a training class. You don't make disciples by handing them out a book. You make disciples by getting your hands dirty. Making disciples means going. It means baptizing, teaching them commitment that you're there. And again, whichever word, again, is the imperative verb, and that is the making disciples, teaching all nations. That's the imperative. The participles tell us how to do that. We do that by teaching them commitment. We do that by showing them commitment and teaching them how to be committed to following Christ. And in the third one that he says to us, the third participle is not only that we have going and baptizing or teaching them commitment, but then the third participle that he gives us is the word teaching them to obey the commandments. Teaching them. Our job is to teach them. As we go, we are showing and leading them to commit to Christ. And then we are teaching them to obey. We're showing them that we're observing all, teaching them to observe all things. What are we teaching them? Everything about Jesus Christ. You know when your job, you know what, Tom, you know when your job discipling Norma Jean is? You know when it ends? When you're dead or when she knows all things about Jesus Christ. And I know you've done a good job. She's a good girl, but she don't know it all yet, so our job is still there. Our job of discipling our children and grandchildren end the day we go to the grave or when they get it all, whichever comes first. Let me tell you which one's going to come first. The grave. Our job is as we go, as long as we're going, we are to be discipling. We are to be teaching them to obey all things. What do we teach them? About Jesus. Teach them about Jesus. That's just that simple. That is the message. That is the message that changes lives. That is the message. That is the only name whereby man must be saved. Teaching them all things, he says. All things. We're teaching them. One of the things that I really think is cool about the language Jesus uses, you can go look this up yourself, you can study it yourself, or you can take my word for it either way, or you can not take my word, I don't care. I want you to know, it says you can actually translate that word, the word that is translated teaching all nations or making disciples as y'all make disciples. Or if you translate it in New York, you guys. Either way. It's a second person verb, which means it's everyone. Our task is as we go, we're leading people to commit to Christ and teaching them all things. That brings up the question of who. Another little interesting thing that Christ does in this statement, he says, teaching all nations. Now, you probably are aware that many places in the Bible, the Greek word cosmos is used to and is translated as world. There are other places where another word is used, and it's often translated as earth. The word that is translated here as all nations is usually translated as Gentiles. Now, if you know anything about the Bible, you know that Jews and Gentiles kind of butted heads. And so let's think for a moment what Christ says. Let's just paraphrase it for a moment. As you go, showing people to commit to Christ and to obey all His commandments, make disciples of the people you don't like. That's what He said. Make disciples of the people least like you. Make disciples of the people you least want to be around. That's what He says when He says all nations. Make disciples. As you go, helping people to learn to commit, teaching people to observe all my commandments, make disciples of the people you like the least. You ever heard that statement that the best way to get rid of an enemy is to make them a friend? Oh, Christ just said. He said the best way for us to sway things, best way for us to change the world is for us to go to all nations. Go. Baptize. Teach. Making disciples. Making disciples. It's our commandment. Listen, He's telling us that the gospel of Jesus Christ is for every group of people, everywhere, every day, all the time. That we are to always be making disciples. That's our job. He tells us that's the purpose of the whole thing, to make disciples. Say, I don't know if I can do that. Yes, you can. You know why? Because I am with you, even unto the end of the world. He says, think about the couch he just put here. All power is given to me in heaven and earth. All authority. Now here's what I want you to go do. But I'm with you. The one with all the power and all the authority. I am with you all the way. Bear with me 1 minute. I want you to think, and this may not necessarily be pleasant. You may not like this example. You may not like this illustration. But you preach next week, you can use your illustrations. I want you to think for a moment. 10, 15 years ago, we'd never heard of anything called ISIS. ISIL. Most of us didn't even really know really what, we might have heard the word Islam, but we really didn't know too much about it. Didn't think much about it. But I want you to think for a moment how radical Islam has spread and become so dominant, so large, dominates the news, dominates our government spending, become the dominant topic, the number one fear of most people. How did that happen? Very simply, ISIS, radical Islam, made disciples. That's what they did. They made disciples. How did they do it? They did it by going. Everywhere they went, everything they did, everything they talked about was about building up Islam. They make no bones about it. They make no secrets about it, that they want to spread. They want to dominate the world. They want Islam to be the world religion. They make no, it's not a secret. Everywhere they go, everything they do, it's who they are. That's what they do. They start from the time you've seen the pictures, just like I have. Little small children, 6, 7, 8 years old, standing there holding rifles. Little small children blowing stuff up. They make no secret. Everywhere they go, all the time they go, wherever they go, to whoever they go, they're making disciples. By doing what? Teaching people to commit to Islam. Right? Commit to our way of thinking. Commit to follow us. Commit to change the way you believe. Commit. They've taken Americans who grew up in freedom, grew up in democracy, grew up in quote, a Christian nation, unquote, and turned their heads around and twisted them around to the point where these people have committed themselves to Islam, committed themselves to their way of following, to the point where they shoot stuff up, blow stuff up as Americans. Everywhere they go, they're asking people to commit, teaching them the ways of Islam and making disciples. And folks, is it working? Is it working? Working pretty good the way I see it. Again, it's become the focus of our military. It's become the focus of the news. What are they doing? They're making disciples. They're following that plan. It's exactly what they're doing. Everywhere they go, they're asking people to commit to Islam and then follow his teachings. They are making disciples, and it's working. And folks, it may not be politically correct, but if by now you hadn't figured it out, I don't care. Islam, everything about it, is straight out of the pits of hell. It is the handiwork of Satan. Anybody that tells you that Islam is a peaceful religion has been dropped on their head repeatedly. Peaceful religions do not walk into crowded malls with dynamite strapped around their chest. Peaceful religions do not fly planes into buildings. Peaceful religions do not cut the heads off of people who disagree with them. It is Satan at work. And yet, they are making disciples hand over foot in every country around the world. I read one document that said that before long they expect that that Muslims will out be the largest number in London. France. We're not just talking about Saudi Arabia, Iran, Iraq. They are making disciples around the world. They're making disciples right here in America. By doing what? Everywhere they go. That's their focus, is to make more. Asking them to commit to following, teaching them to follow, and telling them to observe. And it works. And they are serving a religion that is straight out of hell. What would happen if the Church of Jesus Christ, who is operating under the therefore of all power, all authority, has been given to me under heaven and earth, go and teach all nations, baptizing them and commanding them and obey my commandments? What would happen if a group of people who are promised this, that lo, I go with you always, even unto the end of the world, would put to work and get busy making disciples? If it works for Islam, straight out of hell, what would happen if the Church of Jesus Christ decided to take God up on His promise that I have all authority and all power in heaven and hell, in all the earth, I have all authority, and you operate in my authority? Go make disciples. What would happen? What would change? What would it look like? Folks, I submit to you that in short order, we'd be having to build churches left and right because we wouldn't have room for them to sit down. I submit to you that our churches wouldn't drain their baptistry. They'd just use them from week to week and throw a little Clorox in them and keep going. Our Sunday school classes would be running over. Our offering plates would be running over if we would go about doing what Jesus Christ told us to do with His authority and His blessing. If it works for the devil, how much more will it work for the child of Jesus Christ? I want to ask you to bow your heads this morning. You're here today, and you know beyond any question, any doubt, I'm a child of God. I know the date. I know the time. I remember the place. There is no question whatsoever. I know that I am saved. Then two questions. Are you being discipled? Is someone helping you walk closer to Jesus? And are you helping someone be discipled? Are you helping someone come closer to Christ? If not, you need to be on this altar saying, "Dear Lord, send somebody into my life to help me. Send someone in my life to make me walk closer to You. But Lord, then send someone into my life that I can disciple. Someone into my life that I can show what it means to be committed to Jesus Christ. Someone that I can help to observe all His commandments." You're here today and you don't know Christ. Until you become a disciple, you can't make a disciple. You don't know Him. You've never asked Him into your heart. You've never asked Him to save you. You may be in church, at church, every time the doors are open. You may give, you may sing, you may play, you may teach. But the question this morning is not what do you do. The question this morning is, has Jesus Christ ever come into your life? If not, you need to come and let us show you from His Word how you can be saved, how you can know Him personally, how you can become a disciple. And then we'll take you and walk with you and help you to become a disciple, help you to learn to disciple someone else and help them in their faith. It's not an option. It's a command. Go. Make disciples. Baptizing them. Teaching them all my commandments. As God speaks to your heart this morning, let's stand together.